As we partake of communion today, I want us to recognize and see ourselves, as Paul writes in chapter 1 in the book of Philippians, as joint partakers of the gospel work. Look at chapter 1, verse 7 of this book. Even as it was meet or right for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you all are partakers of my grace. Joint partakers. Fellowship. That's, I believe, the word koinonia. Partakers of my grace. These people in Philippi were participants with Paul while he was in jail, even though they were quite a far away. They could only send, as we'll see, one person to visit Paul. But they still were in fellowship with him. That meant the world to Paul. And obviously these people meant the world to him, as he was so tenderly talking to them and writing to them in this letter. This was no short email. This was obviously an inspired book of the Bible, but one full of truth, and that's what we've been seeing. And I want us to recognize that we're on the same team here. I think we have the same goals, the same motives. As we go through the sermon today, I want us to band together, not just to say that we are living in joyful humility this year, but to strive to live out the character traits that we're going to talk about today. The character traits of Timothy and Epaphroditus. Okay, I don't think I need to repeat too much of what we've said the last couple of weeks. What we're talking about, the humble life. The theme is joyfully displaying the humility of Christ. The title of today's message is The Examples of Joyful Humility, and we're going to look at two specific examples, but this is under the theme of joyfully displaying the humility of Christ. I want us to remind ourselves that joyful humility is outliving the in-living Christ with a modest opinion or estimate of your own importance or position. That should be up here on the PowerPoint, the definition. It is a modest opinion or estimate of our own importance or position. We have looked at four steps to living out joyful humility. Those are also up here, and they're all in one slide. First of all, it starts with allowing God to work in us. Number two, to put away complaining and arguing, which I believe is really the opposite of humility. Number three, it's acting purely as God's light bearers in verse 15. Verse 16 through 18 last week, we looked at the pattern, or that we should pattern our life after the examples of godly saints. And we looked at Paul, first of all, and we're going to look at Timothy and Epaphroditus under this point today. So we're still on step number five, patterning our lives after the example of godly saints, and we barely got started in it last week. Today, I want to answer the question, what does the pattern of a godly saint look like? So it's great to say, let's pattern ourselves, let's model ourselves, let's follow those who've gone before us. But you might say, well, Pastor Andy, great. Well, what does that mean? That's what we're trying to answer today. And we're going to look at six characteristics that we find in Philippians of the examples Paul leaves of humility. And we're going to find six character traits. There's probably more. I just tried to find the main ones. So we're going to be able to walk out of here today, and you should be able to repeat six ways that you know somebody is modeling this, and we need to pattern our lives, not necessarily after that person, after Jesus Christ, but we see it lived in other people's lives. And this is an opportunity to say, okay, there's an area in my life that maybe I'm not up to speed on, or I could use some work. I see that in somebody else. Maybe I should talk to them. You may not even have to say, you know, I'm looking for a patterns of humility. I see that in your life. You wouldn't say it this way. But you might, or read about how they lived it out in a book that maybe they wrote. Or maybe just look at the Bible in Philippians chapter 2. First characteristic, let's just get into examples of joyful humility, patterning our lives after the examples of godly saints. These are six characteristics that I found here in Philippians. The first one is the most obvious, and we're going to skip to verse 21. We'll come back to verse 20 in just a minute. The first characteristic is Christ-centered. Christ-centered. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's. Paul puts it in the negative, and he's talking about Timothy, and he's saying that all these people that are around me are not seeking the best interests of others. They seek their own, but what this man does is seek Jesus Christ. That's what he's saying about Timothy. Everybody else is not doing that in Rome, or whoever that group he's talking about, but he's saying this one, Timothy, verse 19, I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy shortly unto you. Is doing that. He says in verse 20, I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. So we know he's talking about Timothy, and he's saying, well, everybody else, all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. But by application and by, it's clear here, he's saying this man was doing that. So we've been fleshing out what a humble life looks like. And really, the humble life in Philippians 2, let me say it to you, it's the Christ-centered life. A Christ-centered person permits God to work in him. Let me say it again. A Christ-centered person permits God to work in him. A Christ-centered, this might sound familiar to you. A Christ-centered person will stop complaining. A Christ-centered person will act purely as God's light bearer. A Christ-centered person presents the word of life through service to God and others. And a Christ-centered person patterns his life after the examples of godly saints. So you want to know what a Christ-centered person is? He's already told you. He's already told you what it is. It's the life of humility. It's the life of these character traits. So, how do we live out joyful Christianity and joyful humility this year? Well, we put these steps together and we find that it actually is the life of Christ. I mean, ask yourself, did Christ do these things? Did Christ do things according to his Father's work? Always. Did Christ complain? Did Christ act purely as his Father's light bearer? Did Christ present the truth to others that he met? Obviously, the fifth one, Christ didn't have to pattern himself after anyone because he was the perfect one. And Paul is saying, this is the one that you pattern after. You pattern yourself after Christ. And then he tells the Philippians, you know a couple of people. Well, you know, you and I both know a couple of people. And when I look at those two people, Timothy and Epaphroditus, these are examples of Christ-centered humility. Many people in Rome, it says here in verse 21, the people in Rome, and again, we don't know exactly who he's talking about, but the people in Rome that Paul knew who should have been coming alongside him instead were seeking their own gain. Kind of sounds like a lot of people today seeking their own gain about themselves, about how much we can get, how much we can accumulate, how much we can do for ourselves. The phrase in verse 21, seek their own, does not mean there wasn't some genuine Christians in Rome. That's not what he was saying. It indicates rather that Timothy was unique. His friend Timothy was unique in that he desired not his own welfare, not his own state, not his own condition, but others. Friends, that's what we need to be, because that's what Jesus Christ was. Step back to Acts chapter 16, and you can find a little more about Timothy. And we'll just do this real quickly, but we find in Acts 16 a little more detail about this one. And we find that Timothy stood out as a rare gem in a world of self-seekers. Did you hear that? Timothy stood out as a gem, a rare gem in a world of self-seekers. And friends, that's our opportunity to stand out, not because we want to stand out, not because we want to be a sore thumb, but we could stand out today as in a rare way, like a rare gem in a world that is all about themselves. Look at Acts 16, Paul on his missionary journey, second one. And really, as someone said, it really was a teaching journey, to be honest. He was teaching, and obviously starting churches and helping that. But he came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus, the son of a certain woman, which was a Jew, and believed, but his father was a Greek, which was well reported by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and took and circumcised him because of the Jews which were in those quarters, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees to keep, that there were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. And so were the churches established in the faith and increased in number daily. Paul wanted this man. I believe Paul probably led him to the Lord. Okay, I don't know if that officially says that here. But I see as we're going to, well, we'll see that in just a moment why I think that more in Philippians. So we'll come back to that. And Paul, verse 3, wanted him to go with him, and he did. And this was a man that was, we're going to find out, somebody who was unique. And Paul, under the tutelage of, Timothy, under the tutelage of Paul, became a great asset to the work that Paul did. And what we find here in Philippians now later, we find that Paul is saying, he had just talked about humility. He talked about the example of the Lord Jesus Christ. And now he's saying, Timothy, verse 19, I'm going to send him. Now, Timothy didn't go back right away. We don't know exactly the time frame. But there are two people in this passage, Timothy and Epaphroditus. One probably went faster back to Philippi than the other. Timothy probably went a little bit later, but you know what? Paul was willing to give him up. You know why? Because he knew how valuable Timothy was to the gospel work. And he believed that Timothy, even though he was a man who cared for Paul, he knew that it was more important that he be with them. That's humility. That's Christ-centered. That is others first. While all the others, verse 21, were seeking their own, whoever those others were, this man was humbly seeking. Look, verse 21, the things which are Jesus Christ. What are the things of Christ? The things of Christ are the humble, serving actions and attitudes, willing to sacrifice fame, money, and comfort to encourage other saints. Will you be willing to do that? Would you be willing to be a Timothy? Would you be willing to give up the comfort of not seeking your own, but to seek the things, the attitudes, and the actions of Jesus Christ, and you would be willing to sacrifice your money, your fame, if you think you have any, and comfort to encourage other saints? You might say, well, I don't have a whole lot. You think Timothy did? You might say, well, I don't have much money. You think Timothy did? You might say, well, I don't have a lot to give away. I'm guessing Timothy's wardrobe wasn't much. I'm guessing Timothy didn't have a whole lot of food. I'm guessing Timothy didn't really have a permanent location to live. But Paul singles this man out because he followed in this mind of Christ. All of us could use a dose of this truth in our lives. Often we get caught up in ourselves and the things of being busy. I do. I'm always busy. I don't know if it's good busy, but it's busy. We're busy. We're like bees and never stop. And, you know, it's kind of funny. a good illustration of this is I put the security camera on the front of my house and a few months ago, and it picks up a lot of interesting things that I didn't know happened outside my house. I noticed my niece waved at it quietly the other night when she was leaving my house as I'm looking through it, and I've seen some interesting things. I've seen skateboarders go by at a really fast rate of speed. I've seen, just lots of things. Actually, I don't know if Bill realized it, but I went back and saw one a few days ago, maybe a week ago, and I was backing out, and Bill was right behind me, walking behind my van, and I actually stopped, and I did not see him, and if I had continued, I think I would have hit him. And I look back at my camera, I'm like, well, that was a lot closer call than I even realized. But there's been some bees that have been hanging around my camera. They keep showing up. They keep sending it off. We haven't had any cold winter yet, you see. And they keep coming back over and over, and I keep getting video of them. They keep triggering the sensor. They're busy. Way too busy for my liking. That's what Timothy was not about himself. He was a busy person, no doubt, but Timothy and Epaphroditus were men that were devoted to selfless service and sacrifice, and that's the pattern we should seek in our lives. Number two, gospel-centered, verse 22. We know the proof of him that as a son with the Father, he hath served with me in the gospel. Timothy was gospel-centered. He was a faithful son who had served in the gospel. The word proof means proven character. Timothy had proven character. That's what it says. You know the proof? Proven character. And the idea here is the Philippians would have known Timothy from previous days because he had been there before. And they would have known him, listen, to be genuinely interested in their condition. Are you genuinely interested in others' conditions? You know, one of the things we have today in America is a lot of people are not genuinely interested about the next door neighbor even. In fact, I don't even see my next door neighbor. I haven't seen my next door neighbor outside of maybe two times in the last year. We have a hard time even coming out. Are we genuinely interested in the condition of the people in our body? Timothy had been tested, and you know what? He had been proven that he cared about them. Timothy lived out chapter 2, 14 through 16. Paul, I believe, had in mind Timothy and Epaphroditus as he wrote the prior section. Essentially, he was saying, do you want to know someone who is living this out? Let me send you Timothy, who you already know to be living in this way. Would somebody be able to say you? Could Paul write our name, my name, in this and say, yeah, he cares about your state. You've proved it. I don't think Timothy was running around with a hat that said, I've proven my character. No, this was an internal thing that Paul knew and the people could see. And Paul was saying, I can count on this man. And notice, here's what Paul was saying about Timothy. The verse is specific. First of all, on the PowerPoint slide and in your notes, Timothy's reputation and character were proven. That's in that first phrase, proof or proven character. Paul was saying that about Timothy. Wow. Number two, Timothy was Paul's spiritual son. That as a son with the Father. This is a phrase of a very specific nature. And if you go over to 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 2. 1 Timothy 1, verse 2. Paul liked this phrase. And I think this tells me that Paul probably led him to the Lord. Listen, 1 Timothy 1, 2, unto Timothy, my own son in the faith. Of the same womb, literally. Now, Timothy and Paul were not from the same mother. But that's what the phrase idea means. Spiritually. From the son in the faith. 2 Timothy 1, verse 2. 2 Timothy 1, verse 2. To Timothy, my dearly beloved son. Now, he wasn't truly his son in the physical sense of the son, but I believe Timothy was Paul's spiritual son. Number three, Paul not only said about Timothy that his character was proven, that he was his spiritual son, he had a gospel-serving heart. He had served with me in the gospel. The word served is our word for slave, doulos, but it's the verb form. And it's showing that Timothy truly gave his life up to serve in the gospel with Paul. He was a fellow slave with Paul in the gospel endeavor. Everywhere he went, he must have been a testimony of the saving work that had been done in his life. He was gospel-centered. Do you think Timothy, by the way, had suffered at all for the gospel? Somehow I don't think Paul would have had Timothy calling him these things if he hadn't. I think Timothy probably suffered in multiple ways. In fact, just about every first century believer in this time would have suffered in some manner. And so I think the trials that Timothy and that Paul had gone through would have humbled them. And it humbled Timothy. And it not only humbled him, it had proven to instill genuine character that Paul could count on to do the task at hand. And so the question for each of us is not, when will the trials come? Rather, when they do come, will they grow us in our character and humility before the Lord and others? That's what it was with Timothy. Timothy was one, I am going to take a wild guess that I think is right, that had probably suffered for Christ, and it had grown him, and his character had been tested. And it had been proved. 1 Peter chapter 1 speaks of that. So Timothy was faithful. Timothy was yielded to God. Timothy naturally served others. So the questions for you today and for us is, are we faithful? Are we yielded to God? Do we naturally, or really supernaturally, think of others ahead of ourselves? Is our life gospel-centered? Third characteristic, Christ-centered, gospel-centered, like-minded. Chapter 2, verse 20. Third characteristic of a godly saint is like-mindedness. But I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. The word like-minded is the Greek word equal soul. S-O-U-L. Equal soul. Like-minded. Equal soul. And it meant pertaining to or being of the same attitude or same mind. You know what Paul said about Timothy? Here is a man who is equal-souled, who is like-minded. And like-minded about what? Chapter 2, verse 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. That's what it was. It's the mind of Christ, of humility, of all that we've been explaining and going through these last few weeks. It is chapter 2, verse 2. Fulfill ye my joy that you be what? Like-minded. Having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Apparently, like-minded godly people were just as hard to find in Paul's day as they are today. Because isn't that what the next verse tells us? And isn't really that what verse 20 tells us? I have no other person quite like this one. You know what Paul said? I'm struggling to find somebody like this. But he's here. He's here. Paul struggled to find someone to look on the needs of the Philippians, of others, the Philippians above their own. The people of Rome were looking after their own interests and not of the Lord Jesus Christ. They were being selfish. But he had Timothy. Man, it's almost like if Paul could just find one person and he found that person, it was enough for him. Now, I'm sure he wanted others. But Paul said, I've got this one. Paul recognized what Timothy had. Notice the phrase, who will naturally, the word naturally there is the idea of sincerely. Sincerely. Now look at the last phrase. Verse 20, care for your state. It means genuine concern for their welfare. You know when somebody's a fraud. I mean, they can hide it for a little while, but you know when somebody is putting it on, and after about 2 weeks or three or a couple of months, you start to wonder, oh, they seem to be concerned for me, but you know, I got in this real tough time, and they disappeared. They're gone. And frankly, we've all struggled with this. It's hard. It's hard when somebody other of our friends get into tough situations to spend the emotional and spiritual or whatever physical energy to be with them. I saw it when I went through my situation a few years ago that several of my friends just sat with me and spent time, and they were genuinely concerned for the condition that I was going through. And it may not be just a physical, it might be a spiritual issue or a spiritual condition. And it's hard work. But you know, pretty soon, they don't really, really care about you. Timothy wasn't that kind of guy. He really did. And he cared for the Philippians. He had invested spiritual, mental, emotional, physical time with them. And even though it was arduous to go back and forth and to have to go back to Philippi now, and that's what Paul desired, and that's what Timothy desired, and he wanted to care for others. He had genuine concern. Do you have genuine concern for others? I'm serious. Do you really have genuine concern for people in this body? Oh, you say it's Pastor Randy's job to be concerned. Well, you're right. That's why you pay me the big bucks. Timothy sincerely and genuinely shown the concern and care that Paul desired. You know, Paul wanted to go, didn't he? He's like, well, I can't go right now, so I'm going to send the next best thing. I'm going to send Timothy because I know he cares for you. Let me ask you a question. Do you think Paul, well, we know the answer, so it's a rhetorical question. Do you think Paul would have gone if he had the chance? Well, he says it later. He would have been there right away. He'd caught the first airplane out of there if he could have. Okay, they didn't have airplanes, but you get the point. If you want an ideal partnership in the gospel, find someone who is like-minded in the things of the Lord. Even better, be someone who is like-minded in the things of the Lord. Number four, brother and soldier for Christ, verse 25. Yet I suppose it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and companion in labor and fellow soldier, but your messenger and he that ministered to my wants. Epaphroditus now enters the scene here, and we don't have time to look at all the words and everything here, but Epaphroditus is the second example that we're using today. Hey, you want to know what Epaphroditus' name means? Charming. Charming. Yeah, charming. I don't know what that has, you know, if he had a magnetic personality? I don't know. But you know what? Even though his name meant charming and he could have had this great personality, he's mentioned, I think, twice in the Bible. Both in Philippians. Maybe it's one other time. He's not mentioned very often, and nothing about a magnetic personality is given. But his name means charming. And he's thought to be the person who brought the letter to the Philippians. Okay? He's thought to be the courier of this letter. What words describe this man? How can we apply his example? Notice the opening phrase in this verse, I suppose it necessary to send to you. The word necessary has the idea of indispensable. One word, or one who cannot be done without, meaning this is so important. I suppose it necessary. I know it sounds like it's kind of, I suppose, and we use that word. No, this was a picture of somebody that Paul said was indispensable for what needed to be done. It's very probable that the Philippian believers had sent this man to encourage Paul while he was in prison. We know that, we'll see that in just a minute, that he was very sick. whether the journey from Philippi to Paul's jail position, wherever that was, house arrest, or wherever he was, had caused him to be sick, whether he had gotten something along the way. We don't know, but we know he was very close to death, because that's what the verse tells us coming up. And so what we find is this man, Epaphroditus, had come from Philippi, and he was coming with a gift. We see that in chapter 4. He brought a gift. So much here we don't have time to look at, but now look at Epaphroditus. Paul says, I suppose it indispensable to send to you Epaphroditus. And it appears that Epaphroditus had brought a gift to Paul, and now Paul's saying, I need to send him back. But he says, he is my brother. He is my companion. Paul's brother. First of all, Epaphroditus, in your notes, was Paul's brother. And that is the idea of fellowship of the gospel brother. This is the word that means from the same womb. I misspoke earlier. I apologize. This is the word that means from the same womb. Paul's brother. Obviously, it's not the same mother. It speaks of common origin, common level. It means Paul placed himself equal to Epaphroditus. But the level is not physical, it's spiritual. He was his Christian brother. We says about this idea, it levels off the distinction between nobility and peasantry, abolishing both so far as our heavenly citizenship is concerned. In other words, what he's saying is, this idea of brother, it doesn't matter if you come from a rich or from a poor place, you're still a brother. You're on the same level because you both have Christ. Let that sink in. It creates an aristocracy of which all are members, we says, the aristocracy of heaven, unquote. They're all equal. This was Paul's brother. Number two, he was a companion in labor. He furthered the gospel, chapter 1, verse 12. He was a companion in labor, it says here. What I'm saying is that these ideas were used in other places in this chapter, in this book. But this idea of companion in labor means fellow worker. It's used 13 times in the New Testament, mostly by the Apostle Paul, 11 of the 13, a couple times in John. Outside of that, Paul loved this word, fellow worker. Number three, he was a fellow soldier. Faith of the gospel, chapter 1, verse 27. So these three ideas here, Paul's brother, you can hear it in chapter 1, verse 5, fellowship of the gospel. Paul's companion in labor furthered the gospel, chapter 1, verse 12. Fellow soldier, faith of the gospel, chapter 1, verse 27. Epaphroditus was a fellow fighter against the enemies of darkness. This was Paul's friend. Well, the next characteristic of a godly saint is missionary. Number 5, chapter 2, verse 25. Notice the word messenger. Messenger. That word is the Greek word for apostle. In general, the idea of this was somebody that was a representative of someone. You know what? It appears that Epaphroditus was. He was a commissioned representative of the congregation at Philippi. In other words, you know what he was? He was a short-term missionary. Not because Paul needed the gospel, but Paul needed a word of encouragement and a gift. And so they actually sent him as a representative of their body to go and encourage Paul. You know what Jim and Myra Wright do? They go to encourage the church where the missionary resides for a few months. That's kind of the idea of what Epaphroditus was doing with Paul. But the Wrights never, as far as I know, have had to go to jail to visit their missionary. Now, maybe that will happen someday, and maybe they have done that, but for the general time, they're just going, well, they're going to fill in. You know where Epaphroditus had to go? Find Paul in jail. And he went. And he cared, and he loved. As godly saints, we have the privilege of encouraging our fellow believers in different cities and countries, even those who might be next door. When we live in joyful humility, we are also poised to share the gospel with those who we come in contact, to encourage those who are suffering, to love on those who need to be loved on. Number six, and lastly, servant. That's the sixth characteristic. Notice what Epaphroditus was. He was somebody, the end of verse 25, who ministered to my wants. For he longed after you all and was full of heaviness because he had heard that you, because you had heard that he had been sick. Look at these phrases, minister to my wants. The word ministered is a translation of a Greek word used of the ritualistic service of the Levitical priests. It's a priestly word. The service of Epaphroditus in ministering to the needs of Paul is shown to be a priestly work, or that idea. It was the idea that what Epaphroditus was doing in ministering to the needs of Paul while Paul was in Rome was looked upon by the apostle as ministry having as much sacredness as the ministry of the priests in Jewish temple service work. That's how seriously Paul thought of this and saw Epaphroditus, that he cared so much. This was not, you know, I just don't sense that this is what it was. I'm going to go get a dozen roses at Safeway and bring it to my wife, and that's going to minister to her needs. I don't think Epaphroditus had that in mind here, and I just don't sense that's what the word means. Now, should you do that? Sure. Should you do something special in that way? Sure. Send a card, send a note. I'm not minimizing. What I'm saying is, whatever this was, Paul saw it as very serious and very, it meant a lot. It was sacred service. But look at verse 26. Not only did he minister to the needs of Paul in a special way, he longed after all of the Philippians. So Epaphroditus didn't just care for Paul, he cared for those who had sent him. He longed after you all. The man had served Paul, and now Paul wanted to send Epaphroditus back to Philippi to minister to the church there. He had shared in Paul's life, Paul's dangers, Paul's work. He had been through the trials with Paul, and Paul believed that this man would be well suited to encourage the group in Philippi, so he sent him back, maybe with a letter. Epaphroditus lived out what Paul had talked about in this chapter. A man that is described by a brother, soldier, companion, messenger, and minister is characterized by discipline. Epaphroditus must have been a man of discipline. A disciple of Christ cannot be void of discipline. Do you have discipline in your spiritual life? This man was disciplined in everything that he did. And in verse 26, we see Epaphroditus' willingness to serve was shown in that phrase, longed after you all. And the idea of this, here's what the word means, longed, an intense craving, yearning, or desire. It's used in some prominent other locations in the New Testament. And he had a longing to be back with them. I think probably Epaphroditus was torn. He had been sent by the Philippians to Paul, and he wanted to be with Paul, but now Paul was saying, I need to send you back because you need to be with the Philippians. This poor guy. I mean, he was, but he couldn't be in two places at once, but he wanted to serve however the Lord had for him. But you notice here as we close, we notice that in verse 26, it says he was full of heaviness. After you all and was full of heaviness. Why was this man full of heaviness? This idea of heaviness is used, it's only used, I believe, a couple other times, this word, and it was used two other times, both of the Lord Jesus Christ's agony in the Garden of Gethsemane. Matthew 26:37 and Mark 14:33 in the King James, it's the word heavy. That's the idea of this word. It means distressed, troubled with great anguish. I won't get into the specifics of this word, but it looks like, when you read this verse, that he longed after the Philippians, and Epaphroditus was agonizing because ye, that's the Philippians, had heard that he, Epaphroditus, had been sick. So some reason Epaphroditus was agonizing over the Philippians hearing that he had been sick. I don't know why. It's possible that he thought or he had heard that the Philippians felt in sending him caused him to get sick. So that caused, in return, Epaphroditus to feel heavy because he had heard that Philippians kind of blamed themselves. I don't know exactly. I don't want to surmise too much here. What you can see is this man cared for others. He could feel it. He cared. He was selfless. He was more concerned about the people's concern than his own sickness. He was more focused on the plights of others than his own. And whatever his plight was, look at verse 27. He was so sick that he was near to death. He had almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. You know what? If Epaphroditus had died, it would have been a wave after wave of sorrow for the Apostle Paul. That tells me that Paul really liked this guy. And really, Paul thought a lot about him. I sent him, therefore, Paul says in verse 28, Paul says, I'm going to send him, therefore, the more carefully, that when you see him again, you will rejoice, and that I may be less sorrowful. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness. So he writes in his letter to the Philippians, Paul says, receive this man back. Receive him with joy. I understand you send him to me, but obviously he needs to be back with you. So receive him back. Don't get upset at me. Just receive him back with all gladness. Because for the work of Christ, he was near unto death, not regarding his life, to supply your lack of service toward me. Here are the questions today. They're in your bulletin at the bottom of the service. Here's three questions to think about in regards to this as we conclude this. First question is the lesson of love. Do you and I love like Paul loved the beloved? In this tender letter, Paul opens with love. He mentions the beloved, and he loved these people. He couldn't get to them, but he cared. Do you love like that? Do you care like that? Number two, there's a lesson of humility. Do you and I seek the well-being of others, not placing our own desires ahead of those in need? I know, it's hard. We always are seeking for ourselves and seeking the best for ourselves and trying to get the best that we want out of from everybody. I'll tell you what, if we would live just a little differently once in a while, that would sure show a lost world that we actually are living out Jesus Christ. And there's more about our rights and our things and how much we can accumulate and all of that. I wonder what opportunities this week we might have to reverse that trend. But here's another question. Are you a Philippians 1:21 believer or a Philippians 2:21 believer? Well, you know what Philippians 1:21 is, and you know what Philippians 2:21 is. Philippians 1:21 was Paul saying, for me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. Philippians 2:21 says, all seek their own, not the things of Jesus Christ. So question is, are you a chapter 1:21 believer who doesn't consider yourself better than others, who's willing to do whatever for Jesus Christ, or do you just seek your own things? Something to ponder today. Let's close with a word of prayer.